You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Jamie Martinez. Jamie, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Oh, thanks for having me again. That is, I know we talked before, and I was very happy with the first outcome, so I'm excited about talking again.
Yeah, Jamie, last time we talked, it was last October 2019. Now we're in the pandemic. It's we're talking on August 12th, and we talked about your work last time, and this time we're talking about the border project space. So let's just start there, because I think that was so exciting that you're doing that, but we didn't get time to do all of that in the first interview. So tell me about the border project space, how it started and what it is.
Well, we're going in our second year now, and it really started once all the Trump stuff really started to get really bad, and, you know, immigrants were getting bashed. And I felt the need to kind of, like, rebuttal that with just a non-political space, but with immigrant artists, and to do even, it's a small space to do group shows and whatever kind of shows to show our work, nothing political, but because also the border, I felt that the border project space name, the border itself, was political enough. So I opened up about almost 2 years now ago, and it's about 200 square feet, but it's a space in which I try to completely change from show to show. So I use the small space to my advantage, and I also show American artists, but I do show mostly immigrant artists. And that's where the idea came. The first show was almost so spontaneous. I mean, I signed the lease two weeks before
Tell me about the first show, and where is the space exactly?
The space is in 56 Boger Street, which is where all the galleries were at one point. It's a lot. It died
in
a
Brooklyn.
Lot now, obviously.
Right.
Yeah, in Brooklyn. So it's that across the street from the mortgage stop. A lot of good studios, good artists. So it's a well-known place. And when I went in there, it was packed. I mean, oh, my God. When you had an opening, because there was at least, I think, 10, 12 galleries, good shows. So it was another world. This was just 2 years ago, really. But that first show was just perfect. I know a lot of artists because I run a blog too, and I do a lot of studio visits. So within 2 weeks, I just said, let's just put a show together. And we tarped the whole place blue. It was great. It just came together so fast. So the model started there, and then from then on, I felt the need to run a space where nothing was really planned. And nothing is planned till now, the first 2 years. So including that first show, nothing was planned until 2 weeks before, so it had this wet kind of feeling, and I really liked it.
And from kind of spontaneous, unplanned feeling, you mean?
Oh, yeah, because it was still, you know, it was just so fresh, and the work, you could just feel that the idea was fresh and coming to reality really quickly. And you could really feel that. So I stayed with that course for the next, which is what I've done for 2 years. If you look at my website,
I want to talk more about that, but let me ask you a few more questions. So this is a space that is it a storefront, and was your goal non-commercial? You're selling work or not?
Well, it's the first floor of 56 Bogart, so it's all galleries. There is not storefront, but you go up the little stairs, and then two hallways, and it was just nice spaces with full of galleries. By the time I got in there, I was one of the last ones. It was packed. And the idea is just to run a project space. I do sell work, thank God. I got lucky on that. It's not easy to sell art, but the idea is more just about putting the correct work. Forget the selling part. I'll take care of that if I can sell pieces, of course. But really, it's just about art and some stuff isn't sellable, so that can't even be in the conversation or even in my head. It's just whatever kind of happens, and of course we'd love to sell art and help the artists out, which we try to do. For the first 2 years, I've tried to buy something. It depends on the artist. So I'm also supporting the artist within myself, trying to get a smaller piece or something.
And so tell me a little bit about, like, the first few shows, which is where I interrupted you to ask just about, you know, how the space was created, you know, that you rented it, but you said they were very fresh, very spontaneous, unplanned. That sounds great. How is that created? How do you sustain that? And what do you mean exactly by that kind of fresh, wonderful feeling?
Which is still what the border is all about. Everything is still unplanned. Let me give you an example. I have a show opening on the 27th of September. Is my next one? I have no clue. There's nothing even in the ballpark. I'm not even thinking about it until that idea forces almost itself onto me, and then I go with it. And time has a lot to do with it. So after that first show, I really enjoyed that, and from then on, if you look at the website, every show is like completely different. We brought bricks, we've done dirt, we completely transformed the space, and all of those shows were within 2 weeks planned. That means within 2 weeks, I had no artists. I didn't even have an idea of the show. And when it happened, thank God I know so many artists that I would just, a lot of these people were friends. So I'm like, hey, man, 2 weeks from now, they're like, are you crazy? And I'm like, seriously. But once people started seeing the shows that were coming together, like, no problem, I trusted, because I didn't even have a name for the show. That was almost on the back, and it was just straight up almost like whatever the space would tell me what to put in there in a way. I'd go in there, and it would just kind of put something in, and I'd go with that, and it gave the spontaneous, and not only that, really almost theatrical feeling to it, where I could create other worlds because the space is small.
And just going from there. Maybe we should talk about one of the shows, because, and how it evolved. I mean, and also, maybe I should first ask this. You said, you know, partly in response to Trump, not that this is a political show, but with the difficulty a lot of immigrants are having, how do you define immigrant for the purpose of the gallery? What does that mean exactly? What's the full scope of that?
Well, there is no scope, but what happens is I'm an immigrant coming from Colombia, and I know a lot of immigrant artists, period. I know a lot of American artists too. I know a lot of artists, but I am really looking at the beginning and still now, and I also show Americans, is people who came from another country and are fighting despite it's tough. I mean, art is a very difficult career. But then when you come from another country, bring that culture into this, I'm really looking for that. People who come from other cultures into here and just bring something different. There's something different. And try to kind of almost group us together in a way. And network. Network is big. Like, I've met a lot of people, and I've put a lot of people together. So kind of like that, for us to, like, almost for just people to feel that more at home. I'm an immigrant, and I feel I've never really felt at home around these galleries, honestly.
Right.
Not that I wouldn't want to show there. Of course I would, but this is more like a networking. So a lot of immigrant artists can feel welcome to go there and just feel a little more welcome. You know, we're all from somewhere else, and it's become more of a networking place. And I even show everybody. It doesn't matter where you're from, but it's more the immigrant work kind of goes in there.
And I want to talk about some of the work in there, sure. First, you've survived for quite a while with this. A lot of galleries are closing. It seems that you've come up with a way where you don't have to have a completely commercial outlook in order to survive. How does the gallery survive if it's not based on sales? You're putting in your own money from your own job or another job, or how does that work, survival of this space?
Yeah, I think not only for galleries, for artists, you got to have something else, some kind of other financial income coming in these days, really, to give you that creative freedom of doing what you want to do, not just to make sales. But for the first year, I paid for it. I sold some the year before. I had a really good year in sales and art, so I've always felt to recycle that money into other art. So I'd collect. I have a pretty decent collection. And then this is even better, because then I could just show artists. So I always feel like when I sell work out of my own, I'd like to recycle that money and keep it in that art system, ecosystem. So then the next step was the border, and I paid for it. It was expensive. I lost money that first year. It doesn't even matter to me. It doesn't even, I mean, you're not happy about it, but I'm very happy with the outcome. Then the second year, we had some sales, so it did a little better, and I did an open call, which really helped. And not only that, I found even better artists through that. So I did an open call last year, so far for this year, I'm almost financed where the space paid for itself through the open call and some sales, which is spectacular. That's the goal of it, to create something that self-runs. And hopefully at one point we do start making money and we can buy some of these artists we're showing work and hold that work. I think that's kind of the more the approach I'd like to take, and see them grow and hopefully, you know, nurture them and see them grow and get that early work. But always follow the work first.
That's cool. So that's so exciting and great to hear. Walk me through one of the shows. I'd love to talk about it. And there'll be images here and links to the space so people can learn more. But walk me through one of the shows that's memorable for you and that kind of made you feel like, wow, this is why I created this space.
Yeah, I really liked a lot of the shows, but of course you feel that way because they're your babies. But always the first one is the best one, just because it was just 2 weeks, and I got this artist, me and Peter Casper Matt. As soon as I signed the lease, I had really 2 weeks, almost 10 days. And it's the first show that you'll see. It's all blue. We tarped the whole thing blue. We did it in about 3 hours. It was amazing. Oh, my God. Because then we had this backlight that we just lighted with different colors during the day. And that show, I went with 5 artists and all immigrants. And it was just more of a... the name of the show was The Border. It's almost launching the space of immigrants sticking together. Because at that point, it was just bad, you know, with the Trump thing. And immigrants do a lot of work. We do a lot of work, man. We don't need the credit, but respect. And it was just getting bad. So I felt that was great. And it really, the turnout was amazing. We had a lot of people stop by. It got a lot of press. It was in AM New York. I got a couple interviews. And then we just went with that of really transforming the space so the next show has to be completely different. So the show after that, I built a garden with fake grass, kind of like a neighborhood. This is a small space.
So tell me a little more about that. You built a garden in the space.
Yeah, so it was the idea was, say you're walking behind two houses and you're in the grass. And instead of... the windows, that's where the artwork was at, and the walls were like the outside of the house, both different walls, and then the floor was grass. So you were really like looking into windows, but it was the artwork. And the work was really dark. It was a pretty scene, but the work was really dark by women. So it was great. It was like you were looking into an artist kind of inside. It looked great, but really the work was not pretty. So it had a good contrast. That one I went with 5 women artists. Then after that, I did one with Bianca Baraghi, who helped me curate. We put a pool in there. There was water, just to give you a quick idea. Then another
call. Keep going through them, but the water, there was a pool in there that could participants come in and go into the pool, or what was that about?
Yeah, it was a little kiddie pool, and it was by the work was by Carlos Franco, and it was just he's like a mixed multimedia artist. So it was pool with like a frame, and he had very digital, fun feel to it. It was also summer, so it was great. I really liked it, and there was water under, but you couldn't go in there. It was like a kiddie pool. And that one, I actually used the floor. For me, the floor is important. I try to always not show the floor. The one after that was one of the most difficult ones. I'll tell you the two most difficult ones where I learned lessons. The most difficult one is when you bring a whole bunch of dirt. Oh, my God, I'm still getting that dirt out. That was 2018 for Bushwick Open Studios. My God, the traffic was crazy. It was great. Just so many people. So it was all this dirt and these kind of sculptures were there by artist John Drew Scott Worrell and Frank Wong Yafeng. So it was a little, it was, put it this way, it was difficult because then it got dry and it smelled the whole building, which was great. I did not think that smell would be such a part of the show and actually control the show without even thinking. It controlled the building almost. It smelled like dirt. I had to sweep a lot. My neighbors weren't happy. I'm still getting dirt out, but I loved it. I thought it was great. You could hide stuff in there because it was all dirt, like little sculptures nobody would see. And then the second most difficult one was bringing 1,500 bricks. Bringing them in and bringing them out, oh, man, never again. It was a show, what was this, 2019 in February, and it was called Verge, which is probably the only political show maybe, which is Verge, kind of like Walls. So that's why I brought the bricks. So I bricked the whole floor, and it came out perfect. And then the sculptures went on also podiums of bricks. What I didn't think about was how much weight those bricks were. And I'm surprised that, first of all, that space didn't buckle. I broke a vein on the way to the lift to pick them up. I broke a vein on the way to deliver them back because I returned them.
And they broke a vein? What do you mean? You broke a...
Because the axle of a van, these things were so heavy, I just... Oh my God, it was just crazy. To get it there, the van was like a lowrider, and the guy almost didn't do it. And somehow we made it. That was just one thing. Then you got to get it into almost a second floor kind of thing. That wasn't easy. It was just a lot of weight, but it was worth it. I won't do it again, but I thought it was worth it. And then that's the idea, just completely transform it. Anything goes.
Okay,
no rules in there.
That's really exciting to hear, and it sounds kind of crazy and wonderful and exciting. Tell me about one more show before I ask you the last question. What's another notable show? That one sounds really difficult and something that you're still dealing with, but also exciting because you created something that probably looked like no other show in that building, right?
Absolutely, and it was unique. The smell really was amazing. It was the best part of the show. That's right. And also, smell is one of the best ways to recall memories. So it really, really, like, still sticks to you. And when people were walking into that, also with the dirt one, they were just, the smell would really almost bring them back home to, like, Virginia and stuff. They start saying that to me, which is great. And I'd say one more. I had the last one was not easy either, which was great. This was with Magdalena Vicuas. I'm the worst with names, by the way, so excuse me. And this was, she brought all these dirt. It was my second solo show in the gallery. This was from an open call. And she brought these layers of grass, and then she put them upside down. So the dirt was up, the grass was down. So I did bring dirt back in, but not as complicated because there were rolls, so easy. The installation was easy, you just rolled it. The dirt was difficult. But so really the grass was upside down, and then it started going through the dirt and growing itself out. And it really had to do with this house made of kind of biodegradable chemicals and kind of had this latex kind of almost... hard to explain the installation, but it was not a pre-installation, which is what I felt was right. It was the first show right out of this pandemic, and so the model is different now. The model now is one at a time. For that show, nobody was allowed in. I would see you outside. We have the whole street is blocked across the street in the back. So I just had chairs right there, and people would come, and I would let one person at a time in the building, in the show. So only one person would see and experience that show alone, which is, it's kind of built for me since it's a small space. Only one at a time, and who doesn't want to spend, since it's a lot of my shows are very installation-oriented, kind of I like that experience of one-on-one, the person and the art, nothing else. So
I like that too. So what was that show? To talk about the message a little bit, the content, when she brought in all that turf that was turned upside down, what was that about? It sounds symbolic, or as well as aesthetic. What was the artist's idea there?
Yeah, it was called Elements of Perturbation. So kind of like the idea was for her to do kind of a post-apocalyptic setting, like transforming the floor kind of into like a lightless world, which is what's happened. She did this installation before 3 months or 2 months before called Every Dream Home, A Heartache. And this was kind of the follow-up. The dirt was added to create almost a new... I liked it because she just recently showed that, and this was before the virus. So the reason I showed it again, except differently, was the before and after. I really liked that. So she had she showed it before, and as soon as this happened, we transformed it more into a post-apocalyptic kind of thing. And it was a... I don't know. Those installations are hard to explain. It was just, I guess, almost a new world or a new way to looking at how dark things are now, because they are. We're just in the middle of it. I don't know. It's a difficult show to talk about, especially since it deals with the virus.
Right.
So I think it's very important to look at the photo. So if you get a chance, please take a look at the image and her work, and just go to my website and
okay.
You see the image.
So there'll be some links here so viewers can see that and her show
right.
And more. And do you also have shows that aren't installation-oriented, that are painting, sculpture, things like that?
I do, but the idea – I've done one when it was, you know, one really with walls and painting. This was I showed a lot of smaller pieces to show a lot more people. This is a small space. But the idea never starts with anything. It always starts with – so I don't really do just walls and paintings, really, because since I wait 2 weeks for the shows to happen, some sort of theatrical idea comes. It could be that there's a show with just paintings, but it's anchored to something else. So sculpture is very important. It just is. Because it usually leads with it. And I love painting. I'm a painter, and painting's number one. But you gave me a good idea. I should do just a straight painting show and leave it a little more to the walls, even though I'll still have a story to it, because I like that whole kind of like transforming the space. It has to be different. So I can't have one show even close to the next show forever long I'm there. So it keeps me pushing. But it's a good idea to do just a painting show with a little more, I guess.
And so one more thing, because this is a space that's funded by you, that's not dependent on sales. What are you doing behind the scenes? That's your day job to fund these activities in part.
Yeah, I work a lot. I'm a lighting sales rep, so I deal with mostly architects and designers and lighting designers and buildings, apartments, anything you have in Manhattan. Say you have a building in East Village, I can give you all the lights. I represent 27 companies, so we do everything outdoor, indoor, bathrooms. So most of the time I'm dealing with floor plans and projects, big projects that take a lot of time to happen. And that's what I do during the day. That gives me the option to you know, support the space. And anytime I sell work too as an artist, that money goes right into it, which is great. That helps me too. I really believe in keeping money in the system. So
I like that. I like that very much. And so there's links on here so people can find out more about the space, some of the shows we talked about, as well as your open calls.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to have another open call at the end of the year. So if you want to look up, maybe November, look back at the website or look at our Instagram, we'll announce it there. I'll do another open call and put it this way. From the first open call, the last two solo shows have been from there. So it's worked. And I got such great artists, let me tell you, from that open call that I could do 2 years, seriously, 2 years of shows. So I'm going to have another one. Yeah. Because an open call can only work if the work is good. If not, then I can't do an open call. That's just the way it is. And with this first one, the work was so good that I have to do another open call. Because the first two came from there, even the last one that I just talked about with the dirt, with the grass, that came from the open call. My next one will come from the open call. I'll do a group show, and then the rest of the year is from the open call. That's how good the shows are, the submissions. So hopefully next year I get more submissions. We can self-support the space, and if I raise enough, I'll start buying single works from those shows to try to support the artists. But, you know, I can only do so much with the current situation.
Right. Well, that's exciting. I'm so glad we talked about this, and of course, we talked once before about your work, which is also linked to in this interview. I want to ask you the last question, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
Oh, I am reading a new book called The Popol Vuh. I probably mispronounced that too, which is I'm really into the Mayan, obviously, to the work that we talked last time. And it's the Mayan book of the dawn of life and the glories of God and the kings. That's where I'm at. And I just started it, and it's deep, it's heavy. It's another world. I love it.
Jamie, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today. I wish you great luck with your space, and thanks again for talking to me.
Hey, and thank you, because I keep up with your interviews. You've interviewed a couple of even some of people that I'm going to show, and appreciate everything you do, man. Thanks for the opportunity, seriously.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.